It's time for TWiT. Bitcoin hits 1,000. John C. Dvorak has an opinion. What a surprise. We'll talk about Google Glass. Are you a glass hole? And the secret code that kept the government from launching nukes. It wasn't as secret as you might think. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 434, recorded December 1st, 2013. Murder, She Blogged. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Warby Parker Eyewear. Get boutique quality, classically crafted eyewear at revolutionary prices. For a free home try-on of 5 stylish frames of your choice, go to warbyparker.com. And when you decide to purchase, don't forget to enter the promo code TWIT and you'll get free 3-day shipping. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT12. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several in your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with a free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code TWIT and you'll get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show that covers the week's tech news, such as it is. Our great panel, though, to talk about absolutely nothing. So, you know, we'll find something. John C. Dvorak is here.
What kind of a tease is this?
This is like really is an anti-tease, isn't it?
Yeah, that's not good.
I believe in truth in advertising.
Well, we used to have something
to say.
This
show is going to suck.
Maybe.
No, the best shows are when there's nothing.
Almost
to talk about.
Always the best shows are. That's Jason Snell. He's editorial director at IDG, Macworld, and PC World. So he covers the waterfront, despite the fact that he is using the smallest computer I've ever seen.
I have people to use Windows for me.
Okay.
Is that really a computer?
Also from The Verge, Casey Newton is back.
Hello.
Nice to have you back.
Great to be back.
World's tallest tech reporter.
That's right.
How tall?
6'5".
It's not that tall.
Yeah, but no, you add the hair and it gets taller.
The hair is good. So this week.
What about me?
I said hi.
You didn't say. You John didn't let C. me Dvorak, say noagendashow.com. Channel Dvorak, noagendashow.com. Dvorak.org/blog.
When you just stop doing that no agenda show and come work for me.
And by the way.
Make an honest man of yourself.
By the way.
Yeah.
Well, there are a million jokes I could go with. I can go a million ways. I'm not doing it.
Okay.
But by the way, the real Dvorak is my Twitter handle that I have not plugged for probably a year.
Yeah. And?
Well, I just want to get some more
followers. Do you have a lot of followers on there? Are you huge?
Yet. No.
Are you verified?
Yeah, I finally got verified.
The number one. They sent Twitter user with a blue and green icon for an avatar.
You have 93,000 followers. Come on. That's great.
He lives on the west coast of the USA. What is this background?
That is a that is
that a watercolor you did? Is this
Gray
your new?
Marsh Farms in Squim, Washington.
And as you could tell, he is a wine drinker because I recognize a grape vine there.
Yeah, that background's no good.
Or is that where you get your grape leaves?
No, I was just fooling around.
So, as I said, it's kind of a slow week. Thanksgiving, you know, puts a little dent into the tech
news.
Yeah,
no, there's nothing because everyone's off.
And while everybody was off, Bitcoin crossed the $1,000 threshold. It's gone back down, I'm sorry to say. If you go to Mt. Gox, which is, I guess, one of the places you can get the value of Bitcoin. Oh, it just went back up again. It went up $80 while we were talking. It is now at $1,010.
Seems unstable.
That Bitcoin. You never know what it's going to do next.
It was down to 900. It was plunging, and now it's gone back up. The high this month, $1,200 for this cryptocurrency that has no real value, but then I guess neither does an American dollar.
The American dollar has the full faith in
credit
of the U.S. of A. We can tax.
You can pay your taxes with it.
Yeah.
You cannot pay your This is the thing that is against Bitcoin is that you can't pay American taxes with it. That's it.
No, you can't buy groceries at Safeway with it.
Well, you can buy some stuff. You can buy cupcakes.
You can buy cupcakes or anything that has to do with hipsters. You can buy cupcakes. You can buy drugs. And I think that's about it.
I have 7 Bitcoins. You know who has a lot of Bitcoins? 50 Bitcoins is Steve Gibson, because he did a brief Bitcoin mining, flirted with Bitcoin mining briefly. But the guy I feel the most sorry for is a guy named James Howells. He had a hard drive with 7,500 Bitcoins on it.
Yeah.
It sat on a drawer for years. He forgot it contained the Bitcoins because he got them back in 2009 when they were worth pennies.
Right.
And so he threw it out and realized
it's
in the landfill that it's worth $7.5 million.
Well, this was dumb.
He says, I stored a couple of parts away, like the hard drive from the computer. He spilled a drink on it. And the rest of the bits and pieces, which were still working, so I sold them for spares. I kept the hard drive in a drawer in my office for 3 years without a second thought. Totally forgot about Bitcoin altogether. I was distracted.
That is the definition of distracted.
He had cleared out his old IT equipment, hadn't used the drive in 3 years, believed he'd taken everything off it, so it got thrown in the trash bin. He later realized, wait a minute, I had some Bitcoin on there.
This is a guy that needs to focus more in life.
He says, is
the plural of Bitcoin, Bitcoin?
Bitcoin, yeah, coin, plural. Coin is coin, isn't it? No, it's coins.
Coins.
But wait a minute,
though. Then what's coinage?
Bits coin?
Bits coin. That's Bitcoins. I'm, doesn't sound right, does it?
It's very confusing. I admit to not knowing anything about Bitcoin and studiously avoiding knowing anything about Bitcoin until this week. But
how could you not know about Bitcoin today?
But the media to the rescue, two excellent pieces this week explaining Bitcoin to people like me. Wire did a great piece called Bitcoin Survival Guide, and The Economist, which doesn't print bylines, but it was totally Glenn Fleischman who wrote it,
wrote
a piece called Bitcoin Under Pressure, both of which are very solid explainers. So if you're listening and wondering what the heck is Bitcoin, this week I think we got two good pieces that actually explain what the heck this thing is.
6 months ago, The New Yorker had an excellent piece on Bitcoin as well.
Yes, but I was avoiding knowing anything because it seemed irrelevant at the time.
Did any of them explain why the price has gone up so
much? Yeah, Max Kaiser.
It's all speculators. This is a classic case where people think they can get in early, do zero work, and have their investment be worth 10 times as much a year from now.
There's
no
evidence that there's
zero work thing intrigues
me. These numbers. There's some guy just saying what it's worth. It's worth $1,000. It's worth $1,100. It reminds me of my favorite joke.
What's that?
I'm not going to tell it.
Lady, Indians ride side saddle.
No, they ride bareback is the punchline to that joke.
That's good broadcasting, though. Anybody else know any good jokes that we don't want to tell the punchlines
of? This might be a good time. I wanted to do a show that's just the punchlines and just laugh outrageously. Didn't we talk about that?
Yeah, I think we've done it a couple of times.
Just do the punchlines, never do the jokes.
Depends on how many punchlines you actually know.
Well, the thing is, you can do filthy stories and just say the punchline and nobody knows how filthy it is.
Yeah, why'd you do that? Checking for bees. Huh? You ever heard that one?
No. What's the punchline of the Aristocrats?
The Aristocrats
is the punchline.
What's your name? What's the name of the group?
Yeah,
the Aristocrats.
Yeah.
That's not even a dirty
Where's
joke.
My cookie?
That's just a bunch of cussing.
Well, what's great is it's a joke that allows for...
Lots of cussing.
It's dirty when I tell it.
There's a whole movie of people telling the same joke over and over again.
Yeah, I think Gilbert Gottfried still has the best one.
It's pretty filthy.
But again, we won't be telling it now.
No, we won't.
So back to the story.
So
Bitcoin is compelling.
He checked all his backup files. He couldn't locate the coins, so he went to the landfill site in South Wales. When he went to tip the manager, he took me up to the current... Oh, it's called a tip. When I went to the tip, the manager took me up. It's all in this strange UK vernacular. I'm going to have to get Sam Downey to translate. Yeah. When I went to the tip... Come here, Sam. You got to read this. Come here. Sam Downey is going to read this for us.
With a good, strong
accent.
In your
strongest Mancusian.
My best British accent?
Okay. Yeah. Well, not best. He's the guy's from Wales, okay? So start there.
Okay.
Get right up to the microphone, Sam.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, when I went to the tip, the manager took me to the current landfill site, and when I saw it, it's about the size of a football field. My first thought was, no chance, he said.
Isn't that nice? Isn't it posh? Thank you, Sam Downey.
Right. You should develop that voice.
And for you Americans, he meant a soccer field, by the way.
That's what a tip is?
The same size.
Football is a
soccer
field.
Just try translating it. They're about the same size, yeah.
He said that things were sent to the landfill that were sent to the landfill 3 or 4 months ago could be 3 to 5 feet deep.
Man. How much are those bitcoins worth to you?
$7.5 million is a lot.
You could hire somebody to dig it up.
For give them half.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think if you said $3 million to anybody who could find my hard drive, wouldn't be sad though if they found the hard drive and there was no Bitcoin on it. That'd be tough.
Well,
it's an amazing story, but all of this because of, as you said, it's speculation, right, Casey? I mean, it's not.
Manipulation, in my opinion.
You think it's being manipulated? See, the problem is speculation's everywhere. You could speculate on dollars. You could speculate on currency.
Right.
It's all what they call a fiat currency.
Right.
It is a currency based on faith. Now, it helps that the government backs it, the U.S. dollar. Nobody backs Bitcoin.
There was a really interesting blog post today by a guy named Sam Altman, who's a venture capitalist, and he wrote about what the real number to watch with Bitcoin is what he called legitimate transaction volume, which is basically how many people are using it to buy groceries right. and not drugs. And he
said, Silk Road, but Safeway.
And according to his sources in the Bitcoin world, legitimate transaction volume is only up about 2 or 3 times over the past year, whereas the price of a Bitcoin, of course, is up, 100 times or 500 times?
Right.
So until you start to see more people buying groceries with this thing, it may not make sense to buy as a hedge or as your main currency.
We're in a Bitcoin bubble.
It appears that way.
Well, yeah, but you don't know where that bubble could go to 10,000.
Steve Gibson set up a Bitcoin miner just because he wanted to investigate. Because it's a cryptocurrency. He was very interested in the cryptography used in it. And it dropped 50 Bitcoins on him just like that. Hmm. It's worth $50,000 right now. Hmm. Should he sell?
Adam's got 65 of these things.
And what's Adam doing? Adam Curry.
Yeah. And at first he was thinking he's going to sell it. As soon as it hits 1,000, dump him. And my advice is
could go to 10,000.
My advice is that if it hits 10,000, dump them. But if it doesn't, then drop them at 1,000 as it comes plummeting back to earth.
Should you do what the gambler does, which is take half, sell it?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, dump half of it at some point. But I think 1,000 is nowhere near there.
It's going higher.
I think it's going to go to 10,000. What Max Kaiser says it's going to go to 100,000.
So who is this Max Kaiser? You mentioned him before. Who is Max Kaiser?
Max Kaiser, some kind of a pseudo, he's an ex-trader. He's the one who did that Hollywood trading thing where you traded, personalities or whatever. Remember that?
Wait a minute. And the SEC hosts a show on Russian state media called the Kaiser Report.
Yeah. Well, that's where he ended up. But he's always a gloom and doom prognosticator.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
But he developed a trading system for this sort of thing, and everybody believes he's behind it.
Well, no one knows because it was a guy, pseudonym.
Another phony guy. The guy doesn't exist.
Nakamoto.
Yeah, that guy.
We did a triangulation some months ago with the guy who runs the Bitcoin Foundation.
Right, that guy.
Yeah, who was.
It's another funny character.
Well, that's, it is. It's kind of like, who are these people? And I asked him outright. I said, are you Nakamoto?
Hollywood Stock Exchange was the name of that thing.
Oh, I remember the Hollywood Stock Exchange.
That was Kaiser.
Well, that was neat.
Well, they killed it because it was illegal.
Interesting.
I like the idea of Bitcoin in the sense, separate from the speculation about can you buy low and sell high, because it is, because of the crypto, it's basically like electronic cash, in the sense that cash is anonymous.
That's
a great idea for
It's not truly
crime.
Anonymous though, because all the transactions are trackable.
Right, but because it's all signed, it can be anonymous. Although they found that there's some flaws that make it slightly less anonymous. But the idea of an anonymous way to pay for things on the internet, so that it isn't in your credit card trail.
It's a great idea.
There are no transaction fees, right? You can move an enormous amount of money around without paying almost anything.
Do you really think that's a good idea?
Yeah, I do.
Do you use cash for all your transactions when you can?
I use cash for as few transactions as I possibly can.
Never
mind. Out of convenience, though, because that's Adam.
Well,
that's in the real world.
Bitcoins aren't anything but convenient.
They have ATMs somewhere, but you end up getting cash.
So, no, you're now disqualified from that.
Didn't
Ross,
I don't think so.
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Ross Ulbricht, the guy who's accused of being running the Silk Road, didn't he try to hire a Bitcoin assassin? Pay an assassin in Bitcoin?
I think this is all a myth.
I believe
this is all stuff that the government dreamed
up. Totally sounds like a Neal Stephenson novel,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it sounds like bullcrap.
Or maybe William Gibson when it's especially weird. But, yeah, it's very sci-fi.
I mean,
you can use your Bitcoin to go to space. Virgin Atlantic, Virgin Galactic is.
Well, when is that? Can I go tomorrow? Can I go next week? Can I go next month?
It's about as real as Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah.
Later.
Yeah, later. Sure.
People are also like signing contracts with Bitcoin. There are all these other uses that are emerging on Bitcoin that almost have nothing to do with the exchange of money.
In other words, using it as a proof of identity?
Exactly, because you have this you have a digital signature. It's irreversible.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's why like Silicon Valley is just investing millions and millions into Bitcoin companies right now, because you know you may have seen it described as the internet of money. But the basic idea is that Bitcoin, it's more of a protocol like HTTP than it is a currency. So you think of like everything that you could do with, you know, like HTML 1.0 or what you can do with HTML5. Like the thought is Bitcoin is going to become more and more powerful that way.
So do you think that Max Keiser is Satoshi Nakamoto, the guy who created Bitcoin? He's not sophisticated enough.
I agree. He's not.
This was mathematically very sophisticated.
Yeah, this came out of some think tank, university, government agency.
It might not be
like
just
that.
A person. It might, in fact, it's likely a number of people, you think?
I don't know. I mean, nobody knows. That's the big mystery.
That's why it's great.
Yeah.
That's why it's great. Okay.
It's a big mystery. I wouldn't invest in Bitcoin. That's the risk, is that somebody will take American dollars or whatever, euros, and buy bitcoins at $1,000 a bitcoin. And that's not something we're endorsing.
It seems pretty scary. I mean, the confidence in this is a real source.
You blew it. You could have bought bitcoins for 25 cents. You could have picked up a couple hundred of them.
It's another one of those, gosh, if only I'd known.
Yeah, and of course, if you did do that and it went to $3, at that, you'd already say, oh, my God, let me get out while I can.
You would have sold.
This is impossible. This is impossible.
This is why I'm buying up downtown Petaluma, because I think it's the next major metropolis.
It's never going to be a major metropolis, but that would be the best investment you could ever make. Petaluma is just definitely going to be here forever and always going to appreciate in value.
You believe in land?
It's all I invest in.
Really?
Yeah.
That's why you bought that insane asylum up in Port
Arthur?
State mental
rehab.
Hospital. Rehab.
Yeah, big difference.
Sorry, didn't know that.
Copious free parking in Petaluma. So.
A lot of free parking.
Parking's great. You pulled right up in front, didn't you?
That's amazing.
Right up in front. How many places can you say that?
No.
Oh, San Franciscans come up here and they get blown away. You like my Warbys? I'm thinking of getting some new ones. Our show today brought to you by Warby Parker. You know who that is?
No.
They do not take Bitcoin yet, but I wouldn't be surprised. I asked them to send me a monocle. I'm really bummed that I didn't get a monocle from Warby Parker. So, well, let me explain how this works. So it's time to buy new glasses. You know how expensive frames are these days, right?
They're horrible.
And it's because, frankly, I'm going to be honest here. Warby did not tell me to say this, but I'm going to say it. It's a monopoly. It's Luxottica has bought up all the manufacturers.
Right, that one company.
That one company, and it's a monopoly. So Warby Parker is a startup that is trying to break the grip and offer attractive designer.
You're going off script here. It's pretty risky.
I know. I'm taking a chance, but I just love Warby Parker, and I want people to try it. It's the same materials, you know, sold in boutique shops. Beautiful classic frames. Actually, they have vintage frames, which I really like. This is a real response to kind of overpriced, bland eyewear. And you see here, they also give glasses away. They've distributed more than 500,000 pairs of glasses to people who can't afford them. Isn't that nice? Glasses start at $95. Now, you might say, well, how can I buy glasses online? This is how. With the Warby Parker kit. Go online and pick 5 frames that you like. They'll send you the tryout kit. No postage. You try on the different glasses. Help me do this. Now, that's too small for my head, right?
Yeah.
You look... Actually, it makes you look... I don't know.
Cross-eyed.
I don't know what it
makes. All right. Well, I just picked these out. Shouldn't have picked out. That's not bad.
Let's see.
What do you think?
No good.
No? All right. I already have these. I accidentally picked out a pair that I already have, which I like. And these are with my prescription.
Those are kind of feminine, I think.
Feminine?
Yeah, I think so.
No, those are good.
Kind of feminine hipster.
What about this? This is the dark tortoise shell with a titanium front. I like these.
Wow.
Now you look like
a super villain.
Elton John, right?
Super villain? Yeah. Some sort of guy who runs the supervillains, the manager.
So at no cost to you, you got 5 days to try any of the 5 pairs that you see. This is the one I'm going to order, by the way. What do you think? Nice.
Very nice.
Nah, I like the titanium ones better.
Really? The supervillain ones?
Let's see.
For every pair purchased, a pair is distributed to somebody in need. You got to love that. You want to wear the supervillain ones?
I'm going to take a look.
Yeah, you should try. Yeah, wait a minute. What am I doing this? Let's do the John C. Dvorak try on. Warby Parker is a really great idea. They include the special frame box and a prepaid shipping label, so it's easy to return. You choose the frame you want.
The glasses off
you give them
your
prescription details if you want. They also make sunglasses. It doesn't have to be prescription. And, of course, you're going to feel good about it because they partner with nonprofits like Vision Spring to make sure people who need glasses get them. Don't wear these. These are mine. I think you look good. John looks good in those.
Hey.
He's looks scary.
He is running the supervillain organization.
And the horses.
Surprise a loved one with a Warby
Bitcoin.
Parker gift card. It'd be great for the holidays. $50 to $150, and they'll send it along with a Make a Snowman kit so that you get something extra to unwrap. I think that's a good idea. Let me see this. It's warbyparker.com/gift-card. It's Warby, is W-A-R-B-Y, parker.com/gift-card. And you get the Make a Snowman kit, which comes, I mean, this is a physical Make a Snowman kit. It's got buttons and everything.
Hmm.
I love this. Be sure to check out the free home try-on. And when you decide to purchase, you're going to get 3-day free shipping. Look at that, John. We're going to get those for you.
Somebody say I look like $1 million. Green and wrinkled.
Use the promo code TWIT to get 3-day free shipping at warbyparker.com. WARBYPARKER.com. I like those. Should I get those for you? You wear prescription or you want sunglasses like those?
I wear prescription.
We can do either. We'll get either for you. You just give me the information. We're going to order those for John. Don't those look good? He looks like a... You look scary. He looks like... Really does look like... A super villain.
Maybe I should
put the cigar in your mouth with that.
Yeah, one word from this man, and people die.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Holy cow.
Come on, I can't get work.
That's a Bitcoin operator.
A big part for me.
I like that. That's a good look for you, John.
Bitcoin magnate.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, sweetheart.
Sell the Bitcoins.
Shell. This, I don't know if this is true, but it is in The Guardian. That makes it true, right? In the darkest days of the Cold War, as we trembled on the nuclear brink, one thing stood in the way of catastrophe, of an accidental launch of a nuclear weapon that would have destroyed the entire world.
Uh-huh.
And that was, of course, the secret 8-digit number required to launch America's arsenal of intercontinental ballistic missiles. If you knew that number, without that vital obstacle, any... You saw it, Dr. Strangelove, that crazy guy protecting our vital bodily fluids could have, or a terrorist could have launched a war that would have ended the world as we know it. So now we found out what that 8-digit code was. It was 8 zeros. 0000000.
Now I'll say it again.
Bruce Blair, he worked as a launch officer in an underground nuclear silo in Montana. The codes were the only real mechanical or technical impediment to crews launching missiles. You're supposed to get, remember the code book?
Yeah,
and,
right.
and the president calls up and he's got the football.
Yeah, the
and
football.
He opens the football and inside's a code book. And he says, all right, here's the key. 0000.
He's
zero.
Mayor Quimby? Is that what you're saying?
0000. Bruce says they were all set to zero. There was no safeguard. He's now president of the Center for Defense Information in Washington think tank. He recently revealed the information to Robert McNamara, who was Secretary of Defense during the Kennedy and Johnson years. McNamara responded, he was shocked and outraged. He said, who the hell authorized that? Give me a cigar. Who the hell authorized that? Mr. Blair says the codes were set to zero because they were so deeply disliked by the military. Yeah. In other words, the military said, what if we can't reach the president?
No, we have to blow up the place ourselves.
We're going to have to blow up the place.
This is like every IT situation that you've ever gotten into, right? It's the, all right, we need to add another layer of security. So you're going to need this password. I'm like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever. It's going to be zeros. Mm-hmm. And I assume they still got the two guys with the keys around their necks.
That could be bogus, too, for all we know.
I don't know. Everything I know about the nuclear arsenal is from War Games.
War Games. Right.
So
there's the book, the code
It's
book.
True as far as I can tell.
The president has the football. He opens it up.
There's like three movies. That's all you need to know about nuclear war.
You know, it makes sense. You can see that the military might think, the guy in the White House, he's a bozo. Every 4 years is somebody else. We are in charge here. We don't need those stinking codes.
Might be the CIA.
I think this code is secretly genius because, admit it, you never would have guessed that was the code.
That's
right?
True. It's good as any
security
other.
Security by obscurity.
And they knew that everybody on the outside, if they got wind of this, they would be like, okay, what's the 8-digit code? Well, we'll start at 00000001 and work up. And they'd miss it.
It's the last thing you'd ever guess.
So they'd go all the way around.
All the way to 9999999999.
I would be more worried if it were like 1234567 8. Like, that would terrify me. All zeros?
I think password's another one that's good.
Password
123. Yeah. Classic.
A classic.
Don't say my password out loud.
Knowing what we've learned about passwords in general from the password leaks of the last couple of years, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Are you surprised?
Well, they could probably be cracked easy enough, so they probably could crack anything. So what difference does it make?
Well, that's true. A nine digit is not a very strong password, or 8-digit is not a very strong password at all.
That's right. Well, this was before 1Password came along to, you know, auto-generate codes for us.
There was no LastPass. We had to make it all zeros. Who was going to remember that? And to top it off, apparently, there was a manual that said, whatever you do, make sure you leave it at all zeros. Don't mess up the code. you know what? It's one of those things that's too pat. I understand what you're saying, John. But on the other hand, I also could see a disgruntled military saying, ah, screw that American era.
Yeah.
What do we need? What do we need Johnson to tell us? That guy's a hayseed.
Well, Johnson was not respected, that's for sure.
I remember...
He was nuts.
I remember my uncle, who was a CIA agent.
You had a CIA agent for an uncle,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, for many years.
Wow.
Huh. And I remember talking with him in 1964 when it was Johnson and Goldwater. And I said, who are you voting for? He said, I ain't voting for that Johnson. He's a hayseed.
Huh. Well,
that's the guy with the codes. I should have said, hey, Uncle Duncan, what was the code on the nuclear silo? Do you remember that? He's no longer with us. I'm sorry to say I can't ask him. Okay, that's the news. Thanks for joining us.
That's about it. Sounds right.
YouTube might have a music pass. Do we care?
They do. This is true, by the way.
What does that mean?
This is from The Verge.
Yeah, we've reported that they are going to offer some sort of subscription version that would give you the ability, much like you can on Spotify or audio services like that, to cache music on your phone, to watch music videos without watching ads first.
This is hysterical. Okay, so this is in the version 5.3 of the YouTube app on Android.
Right.
Okay? There's text strings, an XML file called musicupselldialogue.xml. Nicely named.
It's going to be a great page.
And it has these strings. This is the kind of thing you'd put in there if you were an engineer who wanted to screw with us. String name, music pass. String name, offline playback. Take your music everywhere. Background listening. Keep your music playing while using other apps. Uninterrupted music. No ads on millions of songs.
Do you think people really need this kind of thing? Uninterrupted. So you're moving from room to room. You're changing from one phone to your TV, and you, heaven forbid, that this 3-minute song get interrupted for a millisecond.
But John,
this is a big concern for what? For who?
John, you got to. I would guess that anybody under 25, that's how they listen to music.
No,
they don't. No, they don't have Spotify accounts.
They're not that robotic.
They use YouTube.
YouTube is the number one music streaming service in the world,
yes,
bar none.
That's fine, but that doesn't mean that they're so preoccupied with this YouTube action that they can't have it interrupted.
No,
for
in fact, they don't think they care. I watch my kids listen to music. They stop half the songs at 30 seconds anyway.
Right.
Yeah, they're just sampling.
Very short attention span. Boom, boom, boom.
YouTube has more than a billion users a month. Like, the idea that there is not a $1 billion business in it for Google to offer like a tiny fraction of those users a subscription is crazy.
But I understand, Casey, because doesn't Google already offer Google Music?
That is a little weird. Yeah, no, that's completely weird. And that speaks to sort of like some remaining tension in between like Google and YouTube. From what we've been told, they negotiated those deals completely separately. Because, of course, earlier this year, Google launched Google Play All Access.
Google Play Music All Access.
Google Play Music All Access.
Catchy
title.
Nicely named.
Yeah.
GPMAA.
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 Right. So why aren't those two things integrated? And I think the really interesting story will be, how different are these services really? What can you do with the YouTube version that you can't do with the Google
service? But if I'm at Google, I recognize the fact that, Google property YouTube is the number one way people listen to music. Period.
Absolutely.
I mean, but one of the reasons it's number one is because everybody's uploading songs to YouTube and you can play them for free. Right. So if this is, you know, there's increased copyright scanning
I think it's Vevo and stuff like that where they're watching official videos. Look at how many people watch Miley Cyrus on the wrecking ball, right, on YouTube.
Oh,
I mean,
it's huge. It's enormous.
Well, you know, one of the reasons for this is because YouTube is a go-to site for any clip. You can find most stuff on there. You know it's going to be there.
Yeah.
Or you have a good shot at it being there if you give it the right search. I think it's organized poorly because there's a lot of hot clips you want to check out and you can't really find them because YouTube doesn't have any real structure. But whatever the case is, you know that if you put a song in there, you're going to find somebody that's uploaded a video of it or something.
Chad's a young person.
Hi, young person here.
Young person. So you agree that people in your demographic and younger, that YouTube is how you watch music?
Absolutely.
And how do you find music on YouTube?
You can either find other people will already make a playlist for you, so you want to listen to chiptunes or rock.
So you can share playlists on YouTube just like you'd share them on Spotify?
Right. Well, it's just a normal playlist on YouTube. So you just go to any
playlist.
Someone's created a playlist. Or you know that you want your favorite artist. You want to listen to Miley Cyrus or anyone.
You just search for her.
And Vivo. And you search for the official thing. And then just that normally has a playlist. You can watch all their uploaded videos and go
373 million people watched Wrecking Ball on YouTube.
On that one, that's only one feed.
And by the way,
preceded with a 90-second ad.
And by the way, it's preceded with a 30-second ad that you cannot skip.
Oh,
30-second ad you cannot skip.
Yeah,
In fact, I don't even know what the ad's for at this point. I'm just watching some guy try to get dressed in the outside. And now he's running. And now he's running down. Oh, he forgot something. He forgot the girl. And she's got his keys. And
Shop
we don't.
The Levine collection exclusively at Kmart. You can go behind the scenes.
Kmart.
It's a Kmart ad. Who knew?
Kmart.
How much do you think they paid for to be on this 373? I'm just going to freeze this because if she sings, I might throw up. 373 million views.
Yeah.
So this is absolutely huge. I can think.
Totally.
Now, this is Vivo. Vivo is a independent third party that has a deal with YouTube.
Right.
And is constantly threatening to move on. But I think they have to be where
they signed a deal this year.
Say again?
They re-signed this year.
Yeah, they have to recognize this is where the people are.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you're looking for a video on the internet, I mean, just search YouTube. I don't think people want to search anywhere but YouTube. It is the definitive repository for videos on the internet.
And again, you peel off like 0.5% of their monthly users. It's a $1 billion business for Google.
And I think for the record companies, they probably make more money on this than they do on selling records.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
And those record companies, keep in mind, like the deals that they have with like the Spotifys and RDOs of the world, they're all identical. So it's
no money.
Well, there's no money, but they're happy to see as many of these services blossom as possible because it's one more chance for them to start getting that money back. Well,
and to take some of the power away from Apple.
Yeah.
Because that's really one of the things that pisses them off.
Here's the thing about Google Play Music All Access. I think I got that right. It was a reactionary play. It was to say, look, we want to have the same thing that Amazon has. Right. We want to have the same thing that Apple has. But what Google has as this huge asset that it wasn't doing this with was YouTube, right? So in some ways, I'm not sure whether Google Play Music All Access needs to be a big success at all. The YouTube thing might be, you know, potentially could blow all of these other similar services out of the water, which is really interesting.
Right. It's also interesting, though, to wonder, like, what if Google had said, we'll do everything we're doing with All Access, but we'll also give you ad-free videos and store videos offline. Then all of a sudden, you have a service that's totally differentiated from everything else out there, and then I think it's, like, a better sales pitch. But they didn't do
that. It's the MTV of this generation.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, who watched? I mean, MTV
you may have
doesn't
to explain
even
that.
Yeah, take us back,
MTV,
Leo.
Kids, back in the day.
Before MTV was a bunch of crappy reality shows, it actually played music videos.
It was like YouTube you couldn't control in a playlist
you
run
had
by
no
someone
choice.
Else.
You had to watch it all. And then they had people like Adam Curry, VJ. What does Adam Curry think of this?
He's never talked about it.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
He does.
He's got
actually.
His pot.
He doesn't smoke.
Google.
Yeah, he's a... For Adam, when you listen to the show, finally, he gave a funny look.
I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know whether I don't know him. I don't know whether he smokes or not. He smokes cigarettes. He's lighting something every time I talk to him.
No. That was, wait a minute. He stopped smoking cigarettes. The last time you talked to him was 3 years ago.
I know, when he flashed a gun on this show.
He did flash a gun. And so you, being the good liberal, banned him from the show.
No, that's not why I banned him. And I did not ban him. He's more than welcome. If you're listening, call us up. We'll put you on right now. Speaking of bans, Google, by the way, Google is putting stereo headphones in Google Glass, and then you could watch your Miley Cyrus.
God, talk
videos.
About an accident waiting to
you're
happen.
Walking
that's
down
great.
The street.
Not looking where I'm going, can't
no,
hear anything.
I can't. I'm people, seeing a wrecking ball.
They're going to have to start pulling people over wearing these things in their car.
There was a college.
It's against happened. The law in California, yeah. for example, to wear headphones mm-hmm. in the car
as
while
it
driving.
Should be.
Two headphones. You can have
wear
one
because you can have an earbud,
but not both.
Okay, well, you can't wear a couple of cans.
Yeah, you can't
but
cover both your ears.
But I've seen numerous people driving around, usually Porsches, with the two buds in their yep. ears, driving around like maniacs, paying no attention to anything going on around them.
They actually, speaking of wrecking ball, at Grand Valley State University, they had to remove, this is in Michigan, the wrecking ball. They had a wrecking ball like...
Because people kept jumping on it for photos.
They did parodies of the wrecking ball. You don't want to show
the
that
big,
guy?
Fat new guy.
Big fat new guy.
How short-sighted of that. But like Grand Valley State University, which no one has ever heard of, right, had an amazing chance. Like they should have let everyone come in and make a wrecking ball parody.
Recruitment tool.
Exactly.
A recruitment tool.
Where's the marketing department?
These guys are idiots in these small yeah. schools. We
recognize
know that.
Recognize the opportunity.
You want to watch some of the parodies? Let's.
Oh, they're so good.
This is.
Oh my God. It's disgusting. Man.
I'm really sorry about that, everybody. I apologize. We'll bleep that out. Anyway, guy wears Google Glass into a restaurant, Seattle, Washington.
I have a lot to say about this. By
this is
way.
This is so it's the Lost Lake Cafe and Lounge. Its sister restaurant, the Five Point Cafe, banned Google Glass earlier. Apparently, Lost Lake has also done so. The night manager asked this fella.
It was Scoble.
Probably was. It was a video teleconference network engineer named Nick Starr. Oh. Asked Starr to take off his Google Glass. Starr said, excuse me, I'd like to see where it says you're not allowed to wear glass in this restaurant.
He probably did say glass, too, instead yeah. of glasses.
And they pointed yeah. to the sign that says we reserve the right to refuse service to anyone.
He actually then posted on his Facebook page this sterling post. I would love an explanation, an apology, a clarification, and if the staff member was in the wrong and lost the owner money last night and also future income as well, that this income be deducted from her pay or her termination.
You got said, the right voice. He said, it's just subtle wow. enough. I like
fire,
it.
Fire her.
Well, now you're going overboard, but it's still the same voice.
Lost Lake says, just for the record, we kindly ask our customers to refrain from wearing and operating Google Glasses inside our restaurants. Please do not videotape anyone using any other sort of technology. If you do wear Google Glasses inside or film or photograph people without their permission, you will be asked to stop or leave.
Is this a mobbed up place? What's the reason
and
for all this
And if we
security?
Ask you to leave, for God's sakes, don't start yelling about your rights. Just shut up and get out. All right, Casey.
Yeah.
Does he have the right to wear Google Glass?
No,
I ask.
No, he doesn't. And the dumbest thing that this guy did was that he walked into an establishment owned by the most vocally anti-Google Glass restaurateur on the planet before even anyone even had the beta version. This guy who owns this Five Point Cafe.
You're right.
He came out, he said, these weren't even on the market. He said, don't you wear these into the Five Point Cafe. Then he opens up the second place. This guy goes in and is like, what do you mean I can't wear my Google Glass? This guy made headlines like around the world in March when he said, I don't want this in my establishment. Mm. So the guy just walked into the wrong place, period. But if you want to complicate it a little bit, since it seems like we're all on the same page here, at the bottom of their menu, this cafe does say, take pictures of yourself inside our restaurant, post them on Instagram, use the hashtag, whatever the name of the restaurant
is. That
might
be smart.
Yeah, which it is. And, of course, lots of places do this. So I guess my question for the panel is, where do you draw the line between you can take a picture and post it on Instagram versus you can wear glass and snap a photo of your plate? You know, right? Why encourage people to Instagram?
I mean, you certainly
and
let
not
people take a picture.
Yeah.
So I see where you're coming from on this.
I think it's hard to draw the line.
You're being provocative.
The guy got a lot of mileage by saying, "I won't allow glass in my restaurants" before it really even happened. Right.
Right. Right.
And that was a smart thing to do from a PR point of view. He got news coverage all over the country. Yeah. Restaurant bans Google Glass, even though nobody ever walked in there wearing Google Glass. So you're right. There seems like there's something going on here. Maybe even this is all intentional.
This also seems to be like a cousin of the, I think, also cafe in Seattle that banned Wi-Fi and said we're going to shut off our Wi-Fi on the weekends and got some press for that. It's like good publicity.
A lot of people went in there.
But if their menu says take pictures of yourself and take pictures of your food, that's the inward gaze. That's stuff that if you want to give yourself permission to take a selfie or take a picture of your plate, that's a little different from the problem with Google Glass is you're looking outward, and other people are like, is he taking a picture of me right now? And I think that's where we got this. It's not privacy. It's almost like manners more than anything else. It's intrusive.
Do you think grass glass is creepy?
Creepy.
It kind of bothers me when I see somebody wearing glasses.
And they're staring at you.
Yeah, it bothers me a little bit. And I'm not a Luddite by any means.
It feels to me more like a look at me kind of statement right now. It's more of that. I don't feel creeped out by it so much as I think, oh, this is somebody who wants people to see that right. They've got one of the only few thousand of these things in the world.
Ultimately, though, I think it's important to realize that this guy who owns the cafe is fighting a losing battle because there is coming a day soon when you will not be able to tell that someone's glasses are Google Glass, right? Like, you're going to see prescription lenses next year. You're going to see sunglasses. You will have no idea that these are Google Glass. And
the rumor was Warby Parker was going to make Google Glass. Yeah.
So where does this evolve from a manners standpoint? How do we as a society say what's okay and not okay? Do manufacturers say we're going to have a light that pops up when we're capturing
Google
video?
Doesn't it? Yeah. Doesn't Glass?
And will everybody know that that's what that means?
Yeah, but you could disable that.
Well, people could disable it. People do lots of really weird things with cell phone cameras today, right?
Scoble says that he's proposing this notion of you put your glass on your head. That's a signal. I'm not using glass.
Why don't you just not wear them in the first place? Well, or put them in your pocket.
But if they're prescription glasses that happen to have this attachment, then the jig is up. You can't I can't see, but I can't see you either.
Right.
I mean, it's as if you were walking around with your camera phone in front of you all the time, going, "Hi, how are you, Casey? Good to see you, John." I mean, that would be equally.
Didn't Justin do that for a long time?
Justin TV.
Apparently, this is possibly apocryphal, but I've heard that in Japan, by law, a shutter noise has to fire every time you take a camera.
That's right.
To prevent people from taking creepy pictures. Right. It's not hard to imagine Google doing something.
But again, it's always disabled. You could always disable it, right?
Well, you mentioned something a little earlier, which was the rudeness factor. And do you remember when cell phones first came into play?
Right.
It was rude to use them in the restaurant. And, oh, my God, this idiot's left a cell phone. Now you go, I don't care what restaurant it is, the best restaurant. People take the cell phone out. They keep it on there. They text during dinner.
They don't talk on it, though.
It's still rude to talk loudly on a cell phone.
We had this conversation because we were talking about the FAA, I'm sorry, the FCC potentially allowing cell phones on flights. They're looking at this right now. We talked about this last week, and I don't remember who it was. Who was it, Chad, who pointed out that we had this problem in restaurants, and then
Jerry Pornell.
Jerry Pornell. Was it Jerry? No.
He mentioned – he was talking about how in L.A. you could – any restaurant you go to – is
a deli with a phone.
Yeah, they'd bring a phone and you'd yell and –
But somebody pointed out, and I think he was rightly so, that we quickly learned not to talk on the phone in the restaurant. People don't do that.
No,
that
was Brian. They'll take a call, it'll ring, and they'll get up and go outside sometimes.
Right. Polite.
It's still rude to have the damn thing ringing.
It was Brian's point of view that social mores, as they have in restaurants, will take over in airplanes, and people will...
You're going to find the blowhard. You're going to be sitting next to them.
That's what I think.
They're always going to be rude people. They're always going to be people who violate the social contract. But what's interesting about glass is we don't know what the social contract is, and it's going to be a while before we get there. And that's true of anything. It's true of CCTV cameras in a downtown street. It's true of taking a cell phone picture. You take a cell phone picture or a picture in general in public when people are sitting on a park bench and you want to take a picture of the park. That's a little bit weird, but at least we've talked about those issues in a way that
use a wide-angle lens and point it away from them. Works like a charm.
I wish this worked. This is from Daily Picks and Flicks. Google Glasses. Every time I see someone with Google Glasses, I'm going to go up to them and scream, Google Glasses, image search, diarrhea, safe search, off, open first 50 results in new tabs. I will then run off into night.
That person is a genius.
I wish it worked.
You got to say okay glass. No,
does that work?
You got to say okay glass.
Okay glass.
Okay glass.
Image search, diarrhea. Safe search off. Open first 50 results in new tabs. That would be great. If that worked, it is true Google Glass is non-discriminate. It will respond to somebody else standing next to you.
That's nice.
That's how you deal with glass holes. That's how you do it. You start doing some weird searches on there.
I don't know. I just don't get it personally. Why somebody is insisting on wearing these things all the time?
It's calling attention to yourself. You're right. That's exactly what it is. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com. Squarespace is the secret behind so many great websites, including our own Inside Twit blog at inside.twit.tv. Go ahead, everybody, go there at once. Try to bring it down. You cannot, because Squarespace is the best hosting, but also the best content management system on top of it. Squarespace starts with 20 beautiful designer templates, each featuring, there you go, inside.twit.tv. Each of them feature, that's not, by the way, the best aesthetic demonstration of Squarespace. We didn't put a lot of effort into that design, did we? Go to squarespace.com. You can see what people are doing. Click the Get Started button. You can start your own site 2 weeks free. You don't need to give them a credit card. Pick one of these great 20 designs. Now, one of the things that will happen when you pick the design, first of all, you'll see all the other sites that are using, or many sites, not all, but some sites that are using these designs, and you'll see how different they look. And that's, I think, really important. Every Squarespace site is unique, has its own, has the site owner's own unique look. But you always get all the great features of a Squarespace site, like the mobile responsive design, which means no matter what kind of screen you're looking at this on, it will look great, whether it's a 27-inch display or a 4-inch phone. Mobile responsive design works every time. You also, of course, get all the great features of Squarespace, the ease of design, the ease of content. You know, a website has to be easy to post to. So you can have your tweets automatically sent in there, all your Facebook stuff. I think Squarespace is a really great engine. If you have an existing site, try porting it over for 2 weeks. You can click the Get Started button, start with a design, import all of your content. They have automatic importers that will take not only the content, but also the comments and even the photos and the links will all be preserved. So you can really get a sense within a few minutes of what your site might look like on Squarespace. Play with it for 2 weeks. If you decide to buy, I will promise you the pricing will blow your mind. $8, as little as $8 a month with an annual plan. And with that annual plan, you get a custom domain free. Pay $16 a month, you get unlimited everything. Unlimited pages, unlimited galleries, great for photographers or artists. You have a gallery for each client. Unlimited blogs, and of course, unlimited bandwidth. You never get a bandwidth bill. Storage is unlimited. The developer platform, those of you who know CSS or JavaScript, is spectacular with color coded syntax and everything. I mean, just really nicely done. If you want to sell, and this is a good time of year maybe to set up that that online store, you will not, $24 a month is an annual plan. I don't think there's anybody offers anything as easy or as powerful. It's fully integrated into any of these templates. They're all e-commerce capable. You can have unlimited physical goods, unlimited digital goods, service products, unlimited pages. They do inventory tracking for you. They'll help you with tax calculations and shipping and coupon controls. And, of course, as always, with an annual plan, you get the free domain name, and they'll hook it all up for you. Try it free for 14 days. Give it a little try, a little swing. And then if you do like it, can I encourage you to use our offer code TWIT12 when you buy, because you're going to get 10% off on your new account. TWIT12 for the 12th month, December. Squarespace.com. A couple of sad notes. As always, you learn about it on Twitter. The actor in The Fast and the Furious, who passed away last night in a horrible car crash. What's his name? I forgot.
Paul Walker.
Paul Walker, that's right. 40 years old. Very sad. And you know, even in all the other stories in the mainstream media, you hear, the way you heard about this is it said, according to Walker's social media sites, people passed the word along on his Facebook and on his Twitter and so forth. Very sad. And I want a personal note. Richard Nagy has passed away. He is the guy who did all the amazing steampunk stuff. He's Datamancer. And he did, I bought last year this beautiful steampunk laptop. Let me open it up. You can get a close-up of this. We made John use it on one show. Did you like it? It's kind of clunky.
Except for the crank.
It is a really great site, and we're so sorry to lose Richard. I learned about this on Boing Boing. There is a auction on eBay. Users Brute Force 1889 is auctioning off a keyboard Richard made, assigned. Proceeds benefit his family. So if you want to go to that eBay auction, it's Brute Force 1889. And we're sorry to hear about the passing of Datamancer. He was a steampunk pioneer and a virtuoso, also death by car. This is why we need autonomous vehicles. More of these. Another auto accident. Did you see the way Paul Walker's car was just destroyed?
That's horrible.
Terrible. He wasn't driving. All right, enough of the sad stuff. Let's move along. This has got to be fun for you, John, watching the musical chairs at Microsoft. They got rid of stack ranking, which you've been bitching about since
forever.
What is stack ranking? Let me close this lid here.
Stack ranking is they're using it at Yahoo right now on either a monthly or a quarterly basis. They've kind of put it into high gear. It's where you have a team of, let's say, 10 people. You have to each rate each other with a 5-point system. And the people with the lowest scores, or the highest, depending on how they use the numbers, sometimes they're one is better, or sometimes five is. You're forced to, it's also called forced ranking. The person goes into the penalty box, and depending on what the procedures are, they get automatically fired.
That's the problem. I mean, you could use this to maybe assess performance, but the automatic firing means that people are going to be like Survivor at each other's throats, making, instead of doing the best work they can, making political alliances, fighting.
When a company uses this at the beginning of an overhaul, it seems to work fine, but then after a period of time, it becomes all they think about is employees instead of trying to help the company out. They're trying to keep their jobs.
Well, as an example, you wouldn't want to work on the team that had other great team members because you wouldn't be the best on that team. You would try to get on a team that everybody else sucked so that you could look good.
Right. The weird thing,
that doesn't encourage innovation.
No. And the weird thing about stacked ranking, if you do get one of those low scores, you can't change. And Microsoft had this policy. If you're like at the number, if you're the bottom of the 5-man rung, you can't change divisions. You can't quit that job and go to work in some other operation. You're stuck, which means you're going to be the whipping boy and you're going to get fired. You're just doomed. It was bad.
Are you surprised? I mean, I'm interested about the timing.
I think it ruined Microsoft, by the way. I think their creativity and everything went down the tubes because nobody was going to put up with this.
So, Forbes pointed out that Adobe's stock went up 68% when it dropped stack ranking. That it was Adobe was using it.
And it wasn't helping them either.
Yeah. So
it's not a good policy, but Yahoo's using it now, so check it out.
So do you think it has anything to do with the CEO switch? We know that Ballmer's retiring, that they're looking for another CEO. I would have thought that they would have waited for the new CEO to announce this. Or is this Ballmer's last ditch attempt to get his popularity up?
I have no idea why they did it when they did it. It's a mystery.
So the speculation, of course, continues over who will be the next CEO. I figure, learn fairly soon.
Yeah.
Ballmer said I'm going to be gone in a year, but I think that we'll find out in the next month or so who's going to be the new CEO. The interesting articles lately say that Tony Bates is Silicon Valley's favorite. Tony is the guy who was the CEO of Skype, and Microsoft hired him by buying Skype. He's currently executive vice president of Microsoft's biz dev and evangelism group. So not necessarily somebody you'd normally put into the CEO role.
I don't know what they're going to do. There's really nobody qualified for that job.
My favorite rumor is that Alan Mulally, currently CEO of Ford, who's 68.
Why would he take this job?
Because the same reason Melissa Meyer took the Yahoo job, because it's a chance to turn around a great American company. Same reason, he took the Ford job.
Ford.
Right, so imagine.
Doesn't have to do it again.
Why not?
I mean, I think the CEO of Ford job is a cherry. Why would you go?
Well, he's retiring. Last time I talked to him, he said, "I'm planning my retirement. They're grooming."
Well, then why would he want to go into a hellhole like Microsoft?
Well, here's the theory. Okay,
what kind of retirement is that?
Here's the theory. He goes in for a few years. He is adult supervision, while internal candidates can, just as has happened to Google, internal candidates can kind of get up to speed on running the company. Eric Schmidt ran Google for 10 years, while Larry Page kind of prepared to take over.
Yeah, but that was from the get-go. That wasn't after a company's been in business forever.
Well, but it's not a bad model, do you think?
I think it's very exciting. Imagine a Microsoft Surface, but with the style of a Ford Fiesta. Now you're talking. All right?
That's what they need.
Come on. make it happen.
So who do you think it's going to be, John? Do you have an opinion on this?
Yeah, I actually think it's going to be ELOP, rhymes with flop.
Well, that was, for instance, ELOP, the guy that will be joining them. He's currently CEO of Nokia. That transition hasn't happened yet. But once the acquisition goes through, and we presume it will have to get Finnish and U.S. government approval. But once it goes through, then ELOP would be at Microsoft. Doesn't that make sense, though? Let ELOP get, he's been at Microsoft before. He's no newcomer.
Yeah.
But let him get his feet, get settled down. Mulally comes in, does the hard stuff, the stuff that is going to make
ELOP
enemies.
ELOP knows how to be a CEO.
All right.
So you think Elop?
I personally am recommending and think it should be John Thompson, the guy who heads up the search committee.
He's another strong candidate.
Yeah.
He's and the only guy on the Microsoft board who apparently, besides Bill and Steve, who apparently does anything.
Thompson is an ex-IBMer who's very talented, very well known. He's been a CEO before, and there's a tradition on Wall Street, you see it all the time, where the guy who heads up the search committee
gets
the job, yeah. Even though he always says, I don't want the job.
We looked everywhere.
I don't want the job.
What, who, me?
They forced me into it.
That's the Dick Cheney approach, right? I'll find you a vice president.
It's me. That's right.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Mm-hmm. But it happens a lot. So he's the sleeper. He'd be the best candidate. He's black. And I think Microsoft
would
could use a
good?
Black CEO.
That would look good, yeah.
Because it's good for the multi-culti thing.
Multi-culti?
Yeah.
That's what we call it.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Elop as in flop, or do you go with the multi-culti?
I'd go with multi-culti every time.
All right.
It's happening.
We'll see. I think we're going to see soon. We'll see what happens. Xbox One came out. I like it.
Have you played with it?
All week?
Played games? You played the zombie game?
Yeah.
What'd you play?
Dead Rising 3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that good?
Yeah. You like those games?
I know. I try to avoid these things. They're time consuming.
You know, there's a trend. This is an interesting thing. And of course, everybody's thinking, Leo, you're an idiot. But there's this interesting thing that's going on with games now where you have to play a whole scenario to get to the opening credits. Mm. And all of them do this. You're right in the middle of the game all of a sudden. What is it? What do they call it?
Cold open.
In media race. You start in the middle of things.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you play, and you finally get somewhere, and then it says, "Welcome to Call of Duty Ghosts."
I like it.
It's a good idea.
It's a Hollywood thing, I think.
Very Hollywood.
They've taken it from the movies. Anyway, that's what happens in Dead Rising 3. You got to kill all these zombies, get around, run, and then it's, "Welcome, Dead Rising 3. Your job to defeat the zombies."
I think it's corny, but okay.
It's a little corny, and the funny thing is they're all doing it.
Yeah.
One guy does it, and the game does well. Everyone does it.
Yeah.
There's no originality. That's the problem with these games. It hasn't been a new game forever.
I keep looking for a game where I don't have to kill anybody. Yeah. Or drive a car, because I drive a car enough. I don't want to drive a car for a game. That's not fun. Totally. And you can't use your force feedback steering wheel with Forza 5. You got to, and the little control. That's no fun.
Huh.
If you're going to drive, give me a steering wheel. Give me some pedals. Give me a seat.
You have to see it. You should track down the video of the show just to watch that.
No, you shouldn't.
Actually, John mentioned a good point, which is these things take a lot of time. And these $50 games that cost, you know, they cost $50 and, you know, you play them for 40 or 50 hours and not everybody
has
that
time. What's your
time worth? I'm really liking, there's another trend that's going on in the video game world where there are these bite-sized games that you download that cost $10 or $15 and that go for like 3 hours. Well, no, they're like Journey.
Journey's amazing.
Or Brothers or Gone Home.
Journey, you don't kill people. You slide down sand dunes. That's the game.
No. That's not the... Well, that's the start of the game. There's more than that. There's 3 hours for it.
He's spent plenty of hours.
Oh, and then you find a magic scarf that lets you fly for like 3 seconds.
You don't find the scarf.
Okay, you guys are spending way too much time on these games.
Yeah, that's a great game, and it's less than 3 hours.
It's going to get more interesting?
Oh, yeah.
I played it for far more than the third hour.
That is an emotional journey. It is like watching a really good movie. Yeah. And Brothers is pretty good, too.
That's an indie game, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's PlayStation only. Brothers is on Xbox and PlayStation, I think.
Microsoft's taking some heat for not having indie games on Xbox One. That will change.
I'm really loving that genre because I don't want to spend $60 for a 50-hour video game, but yeah. I will totally pay $15 or $20 for a 3-hour game.
No, I agree.
Same as a movie.
Yeah,
it's like a movie. Yeah.
Yeah, same amount of time wasted.
Wasted is the word.
Well,
I could slide down those sand dunes and Journey all day.
Okay.
And I have.
After you finish the game, you can go back and do sand dune sliding for three more hours.
You can earn achievements for that.
Really?
Yeah.
There's achievements?
Yeah, there's actually one of the levels has like these different posts, that, and you can actually slalom through them. And if you do the whole slalom course, you get
that's fun.
You get a trophy.
I want that.
Okay.
It does have the Kinect. You talk to your TV now, which is fun. I've been yelling at my TV for a long time.
Well, you have for years.
Now I can talk to it. In fact, I'll tell you what. If you missed, we had a review of the Xbox One. And if you missed that, here's just a little bit of what you might have missed this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit, MacBreak Weekly.
There's proof. I've known it all along. Mike Elgin, writing for the Cult of Mac, says, yes, Apple does maintain a press
blacklist.
Frame rate.
Katie Kirk has struck a deal to become Yahoo's global news anchor.
First, let me say how this is an idiotic expenditure with no tangible benefit for Yahoo.
Before you buy.
A lot of what the Xbox One from Microsoft does is more than gaming. It's gaming plus. For instance, we're using the Skype right now. Watch our Skype picture in the lower inset. If I get out of the shot here, it's going to slowly zoom over to wherever Alex is. This is an amazing thing
Xbox,
to sit in your living room. Xbox,
hang up. Good enough.
Twit. Don't make me come back there.
Xbox, home. Xbox. Hello, Xbox. Go home. Go home. Xbox. Hey, Xbox.
Nothing like it. It's just a thrill and a half.
That sounds like the way to go.
I don't think yelling at your technology is going to catch on.
It doesn't make it, and it doesn't understand any better.
The olden days used to bang it.
Yeah, that's better. That's more tactile. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Fonts would fix things like that.
With the 360, it was constantly like pausing in the middle of a show because, you know, someone would just say something
Xbox.
And it would mishear me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually, they told us on the Xbox One launch coverage that we did that we kept halting the video midway through. What do you think? Well, actually, I want to talk about the Apple blacklist because I know, John, and I referred to this, you were on a Microsoft blacklist at one time.
It showed up in a discovery motion.
We'll talk about
that. I was listed on there as, this guy's trouble.
Is that not true?
Let's see.
It's not true.
I think he is trouble.
I'm not trouble.
I think he is trouble. And we also, what else was the other, there was something else I wanted to talk about that I just saw in that video.
Marissa Mayer and
Katie Kirk.
Oh, yeah.
I want to talk about Katie Kirk, but before
crazy.
We do that,
crazy,
let's talk about.
Crazy.
Well, I'd like to hear your opinion. But let's talk about the fine folks at Audible.com. Audible is the greatest bookstore, 150,000 titles, audio titles that you can listen to. Look at this, The Godfather. You know, a lot of people saw the movie but never read the Gay Talese classic that was the inspiration.
That was Mario Puzo.
I'm sorry, Mario Puzo. Gay Talese wrote what? He wrote the other one.
Something else.
Mario Puzo, you're right. Joe Mantegna narrates. That's got to be good. I got to listen to a little bit of this. That's the worth the price of admission. I'm going to tell you how you can get this in another book for free in a second here. I don't have Flash installed on here. I'm trying to live Flash free. Good luck.
Yeah, it can't be done.
You see, I have two credits. That is the nicest thing when you log into your Audible account and you've got credits. What are you listening to these days, Jason? You're an Audible fan, yeah?
Oh, man. I just read a great book called... I read it. I didn't listen to it. Called The Lies of Locke Lamora.
It's here. Locke Lamora. Is that a sci-fi?
It's kind of like a fantasy, but it's also very Ocean's
Scott
11.
Lynch.
Like thieves who do a heist and there's heist within heist. And
ooh, I like that.
It really was a lot of fun.
I'm putting that. It's from the Gentleman Bastard sequence,
yes.
Book one. Now that's a series I can get behind.
Yes.
The Lies of Locke Lamora.
Gentlemen,
I'm listening to a really good book. I don't know. You know, I was sad when Breaking Bad went off the air, and I'm a fan of The Sopranos.
Have you followed since you didn't? Breaking Bad. I think the next transition from that is actually Homeland.
Love Homeland.
Hmm.
So. This is called Difficult Men, Behind the Scenes of a Creative Revolution for The Sopranos and The Wire to Mad Men and Breaking Bad. It's about people like David Chase, Vince Gilligan, these guys who are – it's kind of interesting because they're basically writers who are elevated suddenly to this executive producer showrunner role. They're suddenly running a kind of basically a corporation, a big business that is much more than just writing, but yet they were given this power and they created these amazing things. I am loving it. The stories behind these shows – how they change television.
I got a related one that you should listen to, which Alan Sepinwall's The Revolution Was Televised.
I've read that. It's great.
Great, great book. He's the TV critic for HitFix, used to be at the New Jersey Star-Ledger. He is he's like the TV critic of record for The Sopranos because he was their home.
Right.
he was New Jersey's TV critic.
He's a Jersey boy.
And it's a great piece about how TV drama changed from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and The Sopranos and The Wire and all of these shows that have changed our expectations for TV drama. It's another good one. That'd be a great one.
They make the excellent point, I think, that really the new creative form is not movies. David Chase wanted to make movies, and he felt like it was a failure that he was writing for TV. But if you think about it, The Sopranos gave him a chance to develop that family over 6 years in ways that no movie, 2-hour movie, would never have allowed.
Film as a director's medium and TV as a writer's medium.
Yeah. And so it very much like a chapter, he called it chapters in a novel, or maybe it was The Wire. It was David Simon who said each episode of The Wire is like chapters in a novel. And many of the writers were novelists in the writer's room at The Wire.
Yeah.
And it really does. And that's, I feel a little bit guilty about the way I binge watch these TV shows and how much devotion we give to shows like Breaking Bad. But
read novels.
I like reading. I like that literary form. I like the idea of taking characters and taking them on a longer journey than 2 hours can allow. And lately, movies have, I've been less interested in movies because they have to have this kind of set piece plot
and shorthand for all the characters.
Right.
You can't get to know them because
there's
not
enough
time.
Of action.
I just saw The Family, Robert De Niro's new one, which is an interesting, it's not what I thought. I thought it was gonna be like, analyze this like a mob comedy, and it's not. It's about actually a family in a witness protection program in France. And because it's Luc Besson directed it, and it's quite an interesting movie, but it's fundamentally unsatisfying because they have to do the whole story in 2 hours.
Yeah,
it's just not enough. I would have loved to see more of these, and you're right, a lot of shorthand. Because I don't have time. Anyway, how did we get into this? We're talking about Audible.com. Reading, that's what you're trying to do with me, John. You were trying to get me back on Audible when you mentioned books.
Yeah, but I gave up. I'm not getting a bonus for this.
Are you going to see, did you love The Hunger Games? Of course you did.
The movie altogether. I have no idea what it's about. I did turn it by accident. I was flipping around. I think it was HBO. And I saw a piece of it where they were trying to shoot this woman running around in the woods.
Yeah.
This is idiotic. And that was all I've seen.
Yeah. Well, you'll be glad to know that the second movie, Catching Fire, is almost out. And if you haven't read The Hunger Games, you can on Audible. Now, here's the deal. These are the best ways to read books. You could do it at the gym. You could do it in the car while you're commuting. All those times that you can't hold a book, but you don't want to waste the time listening to country music you can get some information, fill your head with knowledge, with fun, with entertainment. I want you to try it, audible.com, and I've got two books waiting for you. If you go to audible.com/twit, /twit2, because there's two books, audible.com/twit2, you'll be signing up for the Platinum Plan. That, by the way, also includes the daily audio of the New York, audio edition of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal.
Whole paper?
No, they abridge it. There's not enough time in the day to listen to the audio version of the New York Times.
No.
It'd take all day.
Yeah, a couple days.
And now we read the classifieds. Cars for sale. 1963 Dodge Dart.
They have classifieds in the New York Times. It's just for real estate, high-end real
estate.
That's
how classy the New York Times is. No. They don't even have classified ads. Where did I go wrong?
Keep asking rhetorical questions and you're taking yourself off the track.
Audible.com/twit2. Go there. Get two books free. Audio edition of the New York Times and Wall Street Journal as well. And our thanks. You get it for 30 days. You can cancel in the first 30 days, pay nothing. Those books are yours to keep. But I think you will want to keep going with Audible. Audible.com/twit2. I loves them. So will you. So we had a long argument on Mac Break Weekly about whether Apple had a blacklist. It seems pretty apparent to me that Apple has a blacklist.
Oh, they obviously have a blacklist. What I didn't... Elgin's piece actually discussed
it. Mike Elgin brought this up. Yeah, gave us any proof.
No, he's got zero proof at all. But we know there's one because you've been blacklisted. I've been blacklisted since
Gizmodo's
the 80s.
Been blacklisted.
Right. But, you know, so he did a lot of supposition when he wrote this piece. But it was very entertaining. But the thing that I thought was interesting, because you sense that everything he says is absolutely correct. But the one thing I really stuck out was once you're on the blacklist, you can't get off it.
Yeah, who are you going to call?
Well, you just can't
Ghostbusters.
Get
Ghostbusters.
Blacklist remediator.
You can't.
ReputationDefender.com.
You can't do it. Because I've been on the blacklist since...
What did you do to get on the blacklist?
When Steve Jobs quit... Apple.
Get rid of him. God bless.
No, I was worse than that. I was writing Inside Track and InfoWorld at the time, and it said Steve Jobs, good riddance. Yeah, that was it for me.
And what Jobs does is he says, well, someday I may get back at Apple, and at that point I will never again talk to John C. Dvorak.
Is it surprising that giant companies who are very interested in getting the very best coverage and PR shop for journalists and give them favors and steer away from journalists who they don't want to help?
I'll
tell you, Apple's not the only company that does Apple do some of that?
Yeah,
absolutely. Does Google, so does Microsoft.
Yes, but here's the problem. Apple promotes itself as this great, open, liberal, creative. All the creatives come here. You know, we're doing all this great design and all these things. And then this blacklist doesn't really fit
in.
It's
kind of Nixonian, isn't it?
It's bull crap because the blacklist is all Apple's about. All they care about is the blacklist. If you really think about it, why would the blacklist exist at all if this wasn't a focus? It is a focus, and a blacklist people for all kinds of things. That's the reason they never had porn on anything, because they essentially blacklisted it.
You know, the words
you use. It's a blacklist-oriented company.
I understand the individual words you use, and yet what you said makes no sense.
No, that's the point. It makes no sense to anybody. Yeah.
So I think what you're really saying.
Why does Apple have a blacklist in the first place unless they're focused on it?
I think what you're really saying is that Steve Jobs is a flawed human being, and one of the things that's very true about Steve is he held a grudge. And the corporate DNA that he passed along. And I think this could change under Tim Cook. Tim Cook does not seem like the kind of guy who...
No. He seems exactly
they
like
are,
the kind
They
of
are
guy.
Slowly changing things. I mean, let's be honest. Is Gizmodo going to get...
Never.
...an advanced iPhone after the whole iPhone Never. 5 shenanigans? Probably not. Although, Gizmodo was quoted on stage at Apple's last event.
I thought that was interesting.
So, you know...
Somebody screwed up. They probably got fired.
I don't think so. So
Gizmodo's not invited to
why
that
are you
event.
So, oh, that's
not
right.
Not invited. Wait a minute. PC World's been quoted
I
there and not invited, too.
That we have the number one Apple apologist sitting at the table.
No.
Where?
Jason's
Where?
Not even close. There's John Gruber. There's much bigger guys than Jason.
Oh, yeah. Or he's a second-tier apologist.
I have been on and off of Apple's good list, too. And, you know, companies, you know, here's the shock, and here's the problem I have with Mike's column on Cult of Mac, is he makes it seem like he's shocked that there's gambling right. going on in this establishment. And let's be clear,
not surprising.
Big companies want good PR, and they don't always pick the people who are going to guarantee a good review, but it is a mix of people who they like, people who are going to give them good coverage, and people who reach an audience that they want to reach. And it's a combination of that. The Verge has been on and off the list. Macworld's been on and off the list. You know, it happens because it's PR. They're not doing this out of some sense of duty to the public. They're doing it to promote their products, and they're going to make their decisions. And that's just, Apple does. You know, that's why they're not saints. They're not. If the argument is Apple puts themselves out as this wonderful company that's just trying to help humanity, it's a profit seeking big corporation.
That was part of the marketing.
That's who they are.
That was part of the marketing.
And that, there's nothing wrong with that. But that is who they are, and they're going to make those decisions based on what's right for their company, not because they're friendly guys.
I guess what
I
Mike
would say that's absolutely correct.
What Mike's point of his article was mostly that you should just be aware of it as a consumer of tech journalism that
sure,
Apple tries to manipulate
and,
the media.
And I would say every other company is the case. And he right. puts this spectrum that leads from Apple to Google as the poles. And I don't think that's accurate.
You think Google does the same
I
thing?
I think every major tech company does the same thing. They may not do it in the same way as Apple. And I think it's true that Apple has in the past held a grudge with some people. But I've seen it. I've seen it with Microsoft.
Yeah.
I've seen it with Google. I've
well,
seen
and
it with
John,
Adobe.
You were
I've
on
seen
the
it with Facebook.
Enemies list at Microsoft. Didn't you say you saw that on the blackboard you were walking by?
No, I never saw the blackboard. I saw that somebody sent me the Discovery stuff.
Oh, okay.
And it had my name with a bunch of other people on there. That
so is this was part of the lawsuit? Discussed.
Yeah, it was once some of the earlier lawsuits. It was a lawsuit. This was, I guess, it was like in the late 80s.
And what was the list you were on?
It was a list of do not talk or deal with this person. I called him out on it because Ballmer, I know Ballmer as a friend, and I sent him this stuff, and he never didn't want to talk about it.
Every company does this. I think Jason.
Well, I know, right. But it's a form of corruption to indicate to the public that you're open to do
you know,
evaluation.
That is a bogus argument. You are again putting Apple on a pedestal so you can knock them
off. No, I'm not putting them on a pedestal, but let's put it this way. If you're going to have all these journalistic considerations about ethics in particular, and you are favored by a company and given free goods and given free trips and given all these things, and you write favorable reviews, which you will do with Apple, otherwise you get on the blacklist, how is this even remotely ethical?
Who has been given free trips by Apple?
Well, okay.
I would love some names on that.
Well, okay.
Which the Apple
junket?
Because okay,
we'll
I didn't get
okay,
that
fine.
Invitation.
I don't know about free trips. It's a possibility.
I do get offered free trips by tech companies to go
companies.
To Taiwan
Samsung,
or Seoul.
A lot of the Asian
absolutely.
Tech companies.
Actually, I have less.
And we have to turn them
I
all down.
Have less problems with that if somebody admits it. But all the access to Steve Jobs, the access to the early prototypes, that is favoritism.
You
and
know what
then
I like
you
it,
write
sir.
About it is a work as and you present it to the public as objective. This is bullcrap.
Where in the disclosure form do you say Apple likes us? I mean, you got to disclose this, right? Well, where do you put that?
Apple, you put it up front. You say, yeah, look, Apple gave me an early copy,
right,
and I'm going to write good things, or I'll never get another copy in my
that's
life.
That's the clause that doesn't get stated.
Yeah.
Is there a fear?
Walt Mossberg is pretty clear about that.
He always says we got Walt and Ed and David all say,
and then they say good things.
I don't know. Walt's been pretty
rarely does Walt. Yeah, and he only does it.
He does sometimes.
You get the feeling he's getting permission to do it. Well, he doesn't do this anymore. Yeah. But you get the distinct impression that Pogue is just really goes out of his way to say good things in exchange for getting future access. And this is the same thing happens in Washington with the press corps.
I liken it to Beltway journalism, exactly.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
If you say anything bad about the president, you will not get back into that room.
And that's normal.
Yep.
It's normal. But it's pathetic.
That's the key point is at the moment where you get access and there is something that you have to write about and you have to choose between being honest or not being honest in order to butter up your source. That's the moment where you have to decide if you're in journalism or PR.
Now, always go back to your trips. So somebody,
my trips, yes.
See, I argue about this, and now I take the other side. If you get a free trip to Taiwan from someone, and you tell everyone you got this free trip to go to this event, and you report on the event objectively, knowing you may never go again, which is the way you would do it.
That's good. That's good. You stuck it to the man.
Yeah, except those journal.
All right, we got a free trip,
and screw you.
Weren't there bloggers who went to a trade show in Germany on Samsung's dime, and they started writing things they didn't like, and Samsung was like, "You find your own way home."
Yeah. But then
they
came
about the hotel. Yeah,
they said, "We're not your tickets.
You're out of the hotel.
Always have your tickets with you."
Yes. Katie Couric going to Yahoo. Speaking of David Pogue, he's going to Yahoo. And Katie
Couric. They're loading up. Apparently, all of them, Marissa's bringing all their buddies over.
Well, and Kara Swisher implied that various journalists at All Things D had been approached by Marissa to go to work for Yahoo. So they're trying to build.
Did she say what the finance arrangements were?
She didn't say anything.
Ah, what good is it?
It's got to be big bucks.
I would hope.
For Katie's sake, I hope it's big bucks.
She gets to keep her syndicated show, I believe.
She gets to finish the season.
No, that's not my understanding.
Yeah, my understanding is that she... Well, we'll see. Has it been renewed?
That's the question, isn't
all right.
It? So the sure show's not doing... Katie! Exclamation.
Yes. It's not doing well.
It's not doing all that well.
Okay, well, maybe...
So it may be moot, and Yahoo may know that it's moot.
Ah.
So I don't... You know, let's wait and see if Katie does it next season, and then you can say she's allowed to.
Well, I'm looking forward to Katie Couric and David Pogue.
If I'm Yahoo, I let Katie do whatever she wants.
Now,
right?
I would love to see that, too. Pogue and Couric. Because Pogue is a ham.
Yeah, I think they could burst into song.
I mean, I don't even want to go on stage with that guy.
Heaven, amen. I could see them dancing off. So what is Yahoo up to?
I think it makes sense. Like, Yahoo is one of the best traffic pages in the world, right? And people are watching more and more video on the web. Why not have an anchor for a web page? Like, it actually makes sense to me.
Where are they going
to
put her?
They put her on the homepage.
They won't.
Why not?
Is she going to do
evening news? I don't think they will. That's not the way they do
Yahoo
things.
Yahoo Evening News with featuring da 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 bum 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 bum. Katie Couric with the Yahoo Evening News.
He's the one pounding on the table, not me.
Is that what they're going to do with her, or what? Or they're going to have her do puff pieces? What are they going to do with her?
I think that they'll want to do some big interviews, right?
Yeah.
You know, the big.
If you
gets.
Were a tree, Barbara Walters,
nothing
what
they can
kind
do
of
with
tree?
Her. This is not it's going not to work out. Work. They're not going to put her on the homepage because the homepage is already set in stone kind of the way they want to do it because they make money from that homepage. They're going to put a big video on the front of the homepage and it changes to the Katie Couric show. I don't think so.
I think
what are they going to do with Pogue? Answer me that.
Apparently they want to do a tech
channel.
Pogue is
going to build his own tech vertical. It's like, you know, Grantland or 538, right? Like you take a well-known personality and you give them a bunch of money and they hire smart people and they kind of do what they want. And the hope is that that audience follows them to the new site. I think. Right. I mean, I don't know what the financials have been on Grantland, but it's a great site, right?
What
right.
is Grantland?
Grantland is Bill Simmons.
Yeah. It's ESPN's sort of prestige writing site.
That, yeah.
And they're doing it again with Nate Silver with 538. And yeah, if that – I'm actually more bullish about Pogue than Katie Couric at Yahoo because that seems like a natural fit
at least
in a way.
Tech, yeah.
Because to John's point, you know, video, how is Yahoo going to deploy video? They don't have a YouTube of their own. Right. There is Yahoo Video, but it's not the same. And this is what they're trying to do. I can't imagine she's going to do a show. I'd imagine they're going to be little bits that are going to get embedded here and there.
But Yahoo is investing a lot into video. They have this app called Screens. They paid all that money to get the SNL archives. You'll probably see them do other deals like that. Like, eventually there will be kind of a library of free ad-supported Yahoo Video content. They're going to want to have some exclusive stuff. They can get Katie Couric doing maybe, you know, a daily or weekly web show plus some big interviews that helps drive that audience.
It's not going to pay out. I mean, it's going to cost a fortune to have her. She's not going to work cheap.
Here's from the Yahoo press release. Couric will produce video features for the Yahoo homepage while also continuing to host her syndicated daytime talk show, Katie, on ABC. She says she hopes to, quote, do good, strong, smart things.
Do good.
I hope to be good, strong, and smart.
I hope to do good, strong, smart things.
I hope to do good.
I hope to cash a very large check each and every month.
Definitely be cashing a large check.
Good, large, strong check.
As long as the check's clear.
I wonder.
I think Katie Couric's the wrong. Well, is it the wrong or the right message for the. So Yahoo, presumably, like everybody else who's doing online content, wants to kind of become. Compete with mainstream media, in other words, get the eyeballs for advertising. It's all about advertising. The toughest eyeballs of all are the 18 to 25 demographic that doesn't watch TV.
And doesn't watch Katie Couric.
And seems to me Katie Couric's the wrong person to attract them. Even David Pogue's the wrong person.
There is this maybe untapped, and I think this is what Yahoo's going for, people who are switching to the web for more content. And we've got Katie Couric, who's not just got a news background, but has that
she's
Today
likeable.
Show background
she's
as
likeable.
Well.
Yeah.
Can you tap into an audience that's not the 15 to 25, but maybe is 25 to 40? A more female audience than is a traditional web audience, and
which
maybe,
arguably is the Yahoo audience,
yes,
right? Like, you know,
right? What are Yahoo's demographics?
This is a meeting that was going on in Yahoo. You two guys saying the same kind of thing, convincing yourself.
Well, they paid for me to go there, John. So, you know.
Convincing yourself that this is going to happen, and
when
you're
on the whitelist,
I don't think
Yahoo.
There's a. I don't think it's a prayer in hell that this is going to work out.
But I mean, what does workout even mean? Is it just that they generate enough ads against her contract to like make it break even? You know, Marissa Mayer is trying all sorts of things to bring back the buzz that Yahoo squandered over the past decade, right?
Yep.
And Katie Couric might not be exciting to people like us who've watched her for 10 years, but she definitely has mainstream credibility. She definitely has a following. You bring that over to Yahoo, you start giving people reasons to, you know, download the weather app, download the finance app.
Go to the video site.
Go to the video
it's
site.
It's another brick in the wall of trying to rebuild
you guys
perspective.
Just in
there.
A dream world, you
well,
two.
Well, we're trying to. I don't know if we're saying it'll work. I think we're saying we're trying to figure out why they would do
it. It strikes me this is exactly the strategy that Yahoo used pre Marissa Mayer with Terry Semel, who was a Hollywood guy, Russ Levinson, who in fact tried to hire Katie Couric before.
Oh,
it didn't work
that.
For them. It's the same notion of wait a minute, the internet and TV, they're the same thing. So whatever, let's just bring all the old TV people. Is yeah, what about Matlock? Is there any? Can we get? Is
get Matlock on?
Who could we get that we could put on here? Wouldn't be too expensive, but you know, that's what it is. I'm telling you, I could see these guys'
minds.
You're right,
and you have the whole group here. Since you have a small facility that is actually a broadcasting model, a fractal. You're right, and you've worked with these idiots.
But I don't know what the right answer is, because then there's the other side where you go out and you hire Phil DeFranco and PewDiePie, and you say, let's get the Fred Figgleberry guys, let's get the YouTube stars, because that's what the kids are watching today. And Fred Figglehorn, they put him on the children's Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
How did that work out for Nickelodeon?
Not well, because that's not his audience.
Nobody who watches Fred Figglehorn on YouTube is going to go, oh, hey, Fred's on. He's got a movie. Let's all go.
In other words, what you're saying, people don't walk from one medium to the other.
Okay, Leo, I share all my best ideas on your show. We already the smart hats. We already
smart
talked about
hats,
that.
Yep.
Magnum PI, the web show.
We'll
get Tom Selleck back.
What is
pay
Selleck
him some
doing?
Money. They won't be like hour-long murder mysteries. It'll be small mysteries like Where are the Cookies?
5 minutes.
Five minutes
is he
going to
wear short shorts? Because that's all I really want to know.
Well, then yes.
And an old Ferrari.
He fixes up the Ferrari. He's got Rick and TC fixing up the Ferrari for him.
I like it.
5 minutes long.
5 minutes.
So watch
a minute
carefully.
Of that's the opening credits.
Watch carefully to see who else. Because this is just the beginning of hiring, right?
Yeah.
This is going to go on for a year. Pee Wee Herman. Working at Yahoo. You know, this is going to go on for a long time.
Well, that actually makes more sense since after she bought Tumblr and all that porn, might as well get Pee Wee Herman over.
And Andy Griffith, is he dead yet?
Yes, he's dead,
shoot.
Unfortunately.
Because I think Matlock would be so great.
How about Angela Lansbury? She's still working?
She's still around.
All right.
Yeah, she might fit in.
Jim Napier's still alive.
Murder, She Blogged.
This looks a lot like somebody in the chat room saying, I'm an ex-Yahoo
murder,
person.
Murder, She Blogged.
The Murder, She Blogged.
There you go. Show title.
OMG.
Show title.
Brilliant.
Jessica Fletcher has a blog. It's a Tumblr, naturally. No, it's a Tumblr.
Make it a Tumblr.
It's all...
MurderSheBlogged.tumblr.com.
This week's guest star, Katie Couric.
You, Marissa Meyer, should hire you, Jason Snell.
Oh, that's a... Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll show you could do reunions of old sitcoms. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever happened to the Seinfeld crew? You know, the Cheers gang. Where's Norm today?
Yeah, where's
you could
Norm?
Do, there's
yeah,
so much you could
wants
do.
To know.
There's so much you could do with this. That doesn't seem like this is going to really...
I don't think that... I think this
somebody is... come invest in our company.
But I don't know what
Murder,
you do.
Murder, She Blogged is
I really
our first
don't,
show.
Murder, She
Blogged. Executive producer.
I don't know what you do. I don't think it's obvious because I don't think you hire PewDiePie either. I mean, he belongs on YouTube. That's
it sure makes us makes me feel like the web is still at that place that TV was when they were... shooting video of people on stage on Broadway and broadcasting
right.
it. Like, we don't really know what to
we
do
are.
With this medium.
Right.
So
we're at the Ernie Kovacs moment.
Yeah,
this
we'll take radio
very,
shows.
Very
we'll take
close
stage
to
plays.
The transition from radio to TV, yeah. where the big guys that really blossomed on TV were like Sid Caesar that didn't have a radio show, even though yeah. Jack Benny did transition well. And so
Milton
did a few
Burrow,
other guys.
But, Uncle Milty.
Yeah, but Milton Burrow, I don't believe, had a
he was
major
TV.
Radio show. He was all TV.
Hey, so, Internet, Ernie we're talking Kovacs. About Jack Benny now.
So, well... I'm just
and
trying
then
to...
I remember when that Fred Allen got the show. Remember that Allen Jowie? That
want,
was your...
If you don't want to look to the past to try to understand no. the present, you're crazy.
You got it. And I think this is
this
very
is where
similar.
We are. This is where we are. We're trying to figure out a new medium, and the, yeah. the old stars and the old formats aren't going
to
work.
And but... it has to. I think it has to come from.
So I think the what you said a minute ago about
Murder,
this
She
guy.
Logged.
No, about the guy who's the Figglethorn guy or whatever his
Fred
name
Figglehorn,
is.
Fred Figglehorn. Yeah.
That we they should be developing real. Internet personalities to become the people at Yahoo, not bringing old
you know, Murder,
hacks
She Blogged
from TV
is too
over.
Long. How about Murder, She Tweeted?
Mm. Murder.net.
Yeah. Murder.net.
No,
I think, frankly...
Murder, M-U-R-D-R. Like
Murder, M-U-R-D-R.
Yeah, that would be just the name.
Murder. I love this article, and we're going to talk about it in a second. When did the... entire computing power available to in the world exceed that of a single iPhone. Think about
when
it.
Was it?
Do the math in your head, and we'll talk about it in a second. First, I want to talk about backup, and I want to talk about Carbonite.com, crypto locker. Very scary. It's going around the Swansea Police Department. Swansea, Massachusetts pays $300 to these bad guys because they encrypted the hard drives, right?
What did they click on?
This is the crypto locker virus.
I know, but you have
you get an email that says
click on me.
No, it says attached is a zip file containing a PDF of like an all points bulletin from you know a crook that was you know or whatever it is. Or a lot of times it's like a wire transfer from your bank, and you open it and it, what's inside is a PDF.exe. But a lot of times in Windows you don't see that extra .exe, right? So you click on the PDF, and then it goes out and uses strong encryption, RSA encryption, to encrypt all your documents. And then it puts up a message on your screen that says, you have 72 hours to send us a Bitcoin. Actually, they cut it now because of the price of Bitcoin.
Half a Bitcoin.
Half a Bitcoin. And we'll send you the key. Swansea, every police department in the world has said, do not send the money. You're just encouraging this.
Can you cut Bitcoins in half?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. You're infinite.
Wow.
We'll talk about that.
Far
in a
out,
moment.
Man.
So if this, but what it tells me about the Swansea Police Department, what it tells me about the Swansea Police Department is, mind blown, man, that they didn't have a backup, that they paid these guys money. They didn't have a backup of what?
Well, we get the PIP database here.
Wait a second. I thought.
We got your fingerprints.
I thought cops always called for backup.
Yeah. Well, they should call for Carbonite.
Zing,
hey. Carbonite is free for 15 days. If you use our offer code, you don't need to use a credit card. You can find out, Mac or PC, what you get. You get automatic, continuous backup to the internet, encrypted so it's safe. It is unlimited data, $59.99 a year for everything on that Mac or PC. They also have plans for small businesses, for network-attached storage, for external drives. So go and look at the plans. Pick the one you want. The beauty part is flat fee means you never have to worry about how much data you've got in the Carbonite cloud. By the way, that data is always accessible. And I think this is really important with the backup plan, that you can go and see the backup and download files, make sure it's all there and all okay.
You not only can you download files, log into your Carbonite account on any computer or use their free apps, you can email those files to somebody. You can look at the files. You can use them. Carbonite's amazing. I want you to try it free. 15 days. Use the offer code TWIT. If you decide to buy, you'll get 2 free months when you purchase. 14 months for the price of 12. Do not be the Swansea Police Department. Back it up. Do it right with Carbonite. I love this. This is from John McMahon, who's a software engineer. His blog is P-E-M-U-G-N-G. Forget it. Pamunka. I don't even know. John, get a better blog.
Murder. Name, the domain was available.
The domain. Murder. When did the world computer power pass the equivalent of a single iPhone?
5S?
Well, he's actually doing the A6, which was, according to the Nontex and Geekbench, 322 megaflops.
Okay.
If you go to the 5S, it's actually like twice that good, right?
Yep.
So he's using this megaflops number as your baseline. The Burroughs, the two dual-core Burroughs D825 computer, which was made in 1962, could do... You need 4.6 million of them to do 322 megaflops. there weren't that many in the entire world. So it wasn't then. This was a point. This top-end supercomputer in 1962 was the IBM 7090, 0.1 megaflops. 0.1 million or 100,000 floating point operations per second. In 1960, there were about 6,000 of those. So... he basically, it goes back and forth. He thinks that at some point between, it's hard to know exactly without a lot more information, but some point after the miniskirt, 1964, and before Laffin, 1968, the world had as much computing power as one iPhone 5. So he also says that means...
And the point of this is?
Well, just as fascinating. The average startup in Silicon Valley... is carrying the equivalent power of all the PDP-11s sold in the 1970s.
Wow.
I just think that's fascinating. I mean, it's just an interesting stat.
It's used to play Angry Birds.
Well, it's maybe not used for anything seriously.
Well, I mean, the track we're on is that your phone in your pocket probably has as much power as the laptop you were using, what, 5 years
ago?
Mm. 4 years ago, something like that?
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And if you'd only started minting Bitcoin back then.
Now you're talking. Who's thinking that way?
Torrent Freak. Consider the source. Points out that in the time since DRM has been removed from digital music, revenue has gone up 10%. Say that again?
Bring that up again, and then I have an anecdote which I'll bring up, which I commonly bring up, which was that during the era of Napster, I might as well do it now. The CD sales were increasing while Napster was in play, and then when they put the kibosh on Napster, the CD sales began to fail, and nobody wants to admit that this sort of thing actually, the freedom of people exchanging music.
Sells music. University of Toronto researcher Lorena Zhang took a sample of 5,864 albums, 634 artists, looked at sales figures before and after the labels decided to drop DRM. In long tail, catalog stuff as much as 30% more revenue because people discover songs, right?
Yeah. You find out, this is a good song. I never heard it before.
She says, I find the removal of DRM increases digital sales by 10%. People want unprotected music. Older albums see the sales increase by 41%. Best-selling albums, hardly any benefit.
And in fairness to the labels, which I'm loath to defend, but I mean, this is fairly counterintuitive, right? Like, it would have been hard to make the case to labels 10 years ago that if they just got rid of all DRM, that sales would have taken.
But I hope they're listening now.
I hope they are.
They're never listening. They don't care. They're control freaks. They want to own everything. They don't want people, they're stealing my property.
I know, and that's why the music experience is so much better than the movie experience right now. Because if I buy a movie on iTunes, I can't. It's like the old days of the early days of the iTunes store. I can't take it anywhere that isn't an Apple device.
Yep.
And likewise, you know, with Amazon, it's got to be running in the Amazon app, or you get a disc that has that ultraviolet junk on it, and you know, it's crazy.
Whoever does anybody? Let me ask the chair. Anybody ever use an ultraviolet?
I watched a movie using ultraviolet.
Yeah, how'd that work out? So it comes on a Blu-ray. You buy a Blu-ray disc.
Yep.
I just bought Pacific Rim.
And it says digital copy included.
Digital copy
and
included.
You wait for that iTunes code or that Google Play code or that Amazon code, and then it says ultraviolet coupon. And you're like, oh, no.
Oh, no. So ultraviolet is copy protected, but it's just a digital form.
And you have to use their app.
You can't play it in other apps.
You can't play it in other apps.
It's crazy.
And do they have apps for all the major platforms?
I think so, but it crashes a lot. It's a poor experience, and then if you want to put it on your TV, you can't
AirPlay it.
It is, I would say uncharitably, that it's what would happen if a movie studio came up with a digital medium for videos, but I don't have to be uncharitable. That's what it is.
It is the worst.
It is for people who are more concerned about DRM than anything else, and it's terrible. And so I totally believe this about music, and I do think that video would be in a much better place and people would be much more comfortable buying online videos if they knew that they could put them anywhere.
Yeah.
And right now you can't. Sigh.
And so it goes.
Not for all the Bitcoins the world. In the landfill.
I think we have a pretty big week. This was a slow news week this week because of Thanksgiving, but I think we have a pretty big week coming up. But we don't have Tom Merritt to talk about it.
You don't have Tom?
We had Friday off.
Too much turkey.
He didn't record it for us.
So apparently next week's going to be equally slow. Sorry. Chad, get more interesting people for next week like this group. Okay
good.
You?
I will.
Yeah.
We'll have six people on the panel, just letting you know.
Yeah, that should be great.
And more booze. I think that was my original plan, was to get you all drunk.
You're going to get some wine out here.
We ride the Twitch shuttle home afterwards?
Yeah.
That's the problem. Yeah, you got to get home. You know, we're going to have our Christmas party, and you're all invited, by the way, at a casino, because we have a new casino.
Oh, you're going to have it at Grayton?
Yeah.
That place I was actually surprised that you could get up here because the traffic, I've heard bad things about.
This thing is 400,000 square feet. It has 13 restaurants.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I don't know how many millions of slot machines, because you can't do real gambling.
4,000 slot machines, I believe.
You have to play slots or poker.
They have card tables. Yeah.
But they don't have roulette or craps.
They don't?
No.
They have cards, just cards?
Just cards.
Oh, they should have craps.
13 restaurants. Anyway, we're going to go to Tony's at North Beach for our Christmas party. You want to come?
I might.
Yeah.
Let me see what restaurants they have at the Grayton Casino.
They have a very good steakhouse, very expensive steakhouse.
Oh, doesn't make sense.
Well, I don't know if it's good. It's expensive. I assumed it was good because it was expensive. That was probably
a bad assumption. Yeah. Especially in Grayton.
It's not in Grayton. It's in Roner Park. It's right here.
I thought it was in Grayton.
No, it's right here. It's like just up the road a piece. It's like 10 minutes away.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, we're going to have a good time. And by the way, smoking is encouraged in the casino. I was so relieved when I found out.
Well, you can bring one of those vape.
I'll vape.
I prefer to vape.
Yeah, let's all vape.
Yeah.
At the Twit Christmas party. Hey, Jason Snell, so nice to have you. Thanks for coming up here.
Always
appreciate
a pleasure.
It. Jason is, of course, editorial director at IDG, where he does PC World and Mac World, but best known as the editor-in-chief of Mac World magazine.
Yep.
You still have that title, right?
Sure.
No?
Yeah, sure. I think I'm just editorial director.
He doesn't
director,
know anymore. Okay. He doesn't care.
Yeah,
I like
the man.
That.
The man.
Michael Power.
He's awesome. Always great to have you here. Appreciate it. I want to thank Mr. John C. Dvorak, channeldvorak.com.
Noagendashow.com.
More importantly.
DHUnplugged.com. Don't forget that.
DH Unplugged?
Yeah, Dvorak Horowitz. We do that stock market thing.
I didn't know about this. How does Horowitz feel about Bitcoin?
He thinks he's just befuddled by it.
He's befuddled.
Yes, and that's the way to put it.
That's a good word. I like befuddled.
It only shows 4 restaurants.
There are 13.
Tony's in North Beach, 630 Park Steakhouse, My China, and Daily Grill.
They can't give it all away on the website. You got to investigate.
I want to thank Adam Curry for tweeting. It's a succinct tweet.
Yeah.
He expressed his appreciation for you.
Yeah, he said, "Blow me." Was that?
would be.
But he punctuated it nicely.
Been him.
That's his Twitter handle, is it not?
Blow me?
Yeah, with a period. I liked it. He punctuated perfectly.
You too.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. This is the show that happens every Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m.
Oh, by the way, I want to mention a new domain, Gina Smithsing. I do some work for them.
Yeah, you write about non-tech stuff for her.
No, I write for tech stuff, too.
Well, Chicago hot dog.
The Chicago hot dog is a very good piece. Everyone should read that.
Yeah. What's your latest at new domain?
I think the Chicago hot dog is the last thing.
I would say non-tech, unless there's a tech angle to
Chicago. There's a tech angle. You know, you put the dog in the bun.
It always comes down to that, doesn't it?
And there we go again. Artisanal innovative pizza at Tony's of North Beach. Oh, that's the Tony's of North Beach.
Yeah, the
that
Tony's
guy. You know that? Well, I know of his. He's the guy who, year after year, wins best pizza of the world.
That's
at the
be
international competition.
That Tony. That's our Christmas party.
And he apparently makes it. I've never had his pizza.
He's making a very special Christmas pizza for us.
I bet he is.
It's going to be lovely.
We are so far off the rails, you can't even see the train.
We do this show every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. 2300 UTC on twit.tv. If you can watch live, I encourage you to do so because all the good stuff is always cut out.
It is.
Always cut out. But if you can't, you can get the bowdlerized version of this show online at twit.tv or wherever finer podcasts or netcasts are aggregated and distributed to your portable device via the internet. I thank you for joining us. I hope. Oh, don't forget the survey. Have we asked people to take the survey? If this show disgruntled you in any way, here's your opportunity to tell us what you think.
Get rid of those guys.
Twit.tv/survey. That's probably how we should get people to do the survey. If you're upset or annoyed or in any way wish to...
Well, that would be everyone.
...vent. Bruce says, I've taken it 10 times now, and the show's still as bad as it always was.
Still stinks.
Twit.tv/survey. Thank you. And don't forget, and you're invited also to this, our 24 hours of New Year's.
Ooh.
Starting at 4 a.m. Pacific time, New Year's Eve, going through 4 a.m. Pacific time,
Ooh.
New Year's
You're
Day.
Going to be broadcasting at 4 a.m.?
Yeah, 24 hours.
You did this last time you did this, I remember this. Everybody was plastered.
Oh, by the end of the show, we're all going to be out of it.
Yeah.
Because we're going to toast
unbelievable.
At the top of each hour, and in fact, in some time zones, at the bottom of each hour, we're going to toast and count down the new year. Welcome 2014.
And if I'm not mistaken,
around
the counting down was slurred.
No, we're going to pre-record that. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Another
this
twit
is
in the can.